Have you ever read Jungle Book by Rudyard Kipling? Perhaps you've seen the Disney film about it. Look for the Bear Necessities is a song from that movie. The book is based on a true occurrence. It's about a boy that was actually lost in the jungle. This boy was found by a pack of wolves and raised by them. People traveling in the jungle saw the young wolf boy. They organized an expedition to hunt him down. Later, he was found and brought back to civilization. The wolf boy's body adapted itself extremely well to the environment. The wolf boy could not and did not survive long among men, for he had learned to crawl and even run on his hands and legs like a wolf. He had even grown hair all over his body, though not as much as a wolf. He did make sounds like a wolf, though. The boy, even among humans, thought of himself as a wolf and acted like a wolf. No amount of coaxing or training could change the boy's concept of himself as a wolf. It was not long before the boy died. He could not handle captivity among humans, even though he was a human. When I was a boy, I heard a story that had a great effect on me. It was about an adventurous young boy who liked to hike and to wander and daydream in the mountains. His parents' farm lay nestled right up against a mountain. The mountain rose out of his back pasture. One day, while hiking and roaming on the mountain, the boy came across an eagle's nest. The mother eagle was gone for a moment, and so the boy got very close to the nest. He saw that there were a couple of eggs in it. The boy took one of the eggs and hurried down the hill towards home. Once there, he went into the chicken coop where the hens were laying. He scared a hen off her nest and placed the eagle egg next to the chicken eggs. The eagle hatched about the same time as the rest of the hen's chicks, and the eagle grew to full size, but it scratched in the dirt for its food like the rest of the chickens. It looked like an eagle to people on the outside, but on the inside of that eagle's head, it thought it was a chicken. This began to disturb the boy more and more as the days went by. He knew it was an eagle and wanted it to act like an eagle. One day, the boy grabbed the bird, threw him into the air, and yelled, "You're an eagle! Fly!" The bird fell onto the ground, picked itself up, shook the dust out of its feathers, and began scratching and pecking, just like the rest of the chickens. The boy wasn't going to give up that easily. He grabbed the bird and climbed to the top of the barn. From the top of the barn, the boy threw the eagle into the air and said again, "You're an eagle! Fly!" Down tumbled the bird into the barnyard, and again it just glided down and began scratching in the dirt for food. Exasperated, the boy left the bird alone for the rest of the day. The next morning, the boy got up while it was still dark. He slipped out of the house and into the chicken coop. He grabbed the eagle and carried it up the mountain. Now the mountain looked as though a giant had taken a mighty axe and split it in half. Running through the middle of the mountain was a deep canyon with a river flowing through it. The boy reached the top of the cliff just as the sun was beginning to rise over the horizon. The boy held the eagle up. A slight breeze began to work its way through the eagle's feathers. The eagle cocked its head slightly as a ray of sunlight shot over the horizon. The boy held the eagle for a moment and then threw the eagle over the cliff. Looking over the edge, the boy saw the eagle fall deeper and deeper into the canyon. "You're an eagle! Fly!" the boy screamed. Down, down it tumbled, deeper and deeper into the canyon. And then finally, whoosh! The eagle spread its wings and began soaring higher and higher and higher up to the edge of the canyon, higher, higher, beyond the boy. It was flying like an eagle. These two stories, the first one true and the second one fictional, both illuminate a well-known and documented point. We act the way we think about ourselves. Like the baby that was raised as a wolf or the eagle that was raised as a chicken, we will act in exact accordance with the way we feel about ourselves and perceive our abilities. If we think we are a poor student, we will be a poor student. We will get grades like a poor student, or I should say that we will do the things that a poor student would do to get bad grades. Similarly, if we think of ourselves as a good student or a very talented piano player, we will do the things that good students do or talented piano players do to get good grades. or play as well as a talented student. If we think of ourselves as eagles, we will be eagles. If we think of ourselves as chickens, we will be chickens. Let's call this concept we have of ourselves vision. The vision we have of ourselves largely determines what we will do and how we will act. I'm not saying that just by changing your vision, you can be the world's greatest tennis player or pianist. Everyone has their own unique combination of talents and abilities. They also have their own unique combination of limitations. What I am saying is that you will accomplish a lot more in life with a large vision of yourself than with a small vision of yourself. You'll accomplish a lot more with a positive attitude than a negative one. Now, what does all this have to do with you and playing the piano? Well, it has a lot to do with you and playing the piano. Ask yourself, do I want to play the piano beautifully? Do I want to play at the $5 job level? If you do want to play and be excellent, you need to know what excellence sounds like. You need to know what the $5 job sounds like. If your teacher provides you with a tape of your piano pieces, you should listen to that tape regularly with your piano book in hand. But don't just listen to the tape. Practice with the tape. Have your book in hand and read the music as it is being played by your teacher. Follow all the fingerings, phrasing, and dynamics. In your mind, feel the keys under your fingers. If you do this, the time it takes you to learn a piece will be greatly reduced. To have you do an exercise. Now don't worry, you won't have to get up and do jumping jacks right here. This music is an aerobic music. This exercise you can do with your eyes shut. Just sitting back in the chair with no one even knowing you're doing this exercise. Ready? Here it is. Sit back in your chair. Pretend and see yourself holding your piano book in your lap. Pretend you are hearing your piano pieces being played on the tape recorder. Now see yourself sitting there, playing an imaginary piano along with the piano music you're hearing. Notice how perfectly you are playing. You are really doing well. Okay, the exercise is over. Now you know how to listen to the tape of your piano pieces. Again, listen with your book in your lap. Imagine yourself playing a real piano. Really move those fingers. Imagine yourself playing as perfectly as your teacher is on the tape. Now, you don't always have to listen with the book in your hand. Sometimes you can listen, just put it on while you're doing the dishes for your mom. Or you can do it while you're sweeping the floor. Or put your headphones on while you're out jogging or whatever you like to do with your headphones, riding on the bus to school, then listen to it then. It doesn't really matter, but it does help if you sit down with your book frequently and go through the fingerings, go through the phrasing, see it in your mind. Does this vision or imaginary practice really help? You bet it does. Again, how can you play perfectly if you've never heard perfectly? How can you play at the $5 job level if you have never heard what the $5 job sounds like? Do you like to play basketball? I sure do. We had a basketball standard at our house as I was growing up. Perhaps it was because my family was a family of all boys that our house was the favorite place of all the rest of the boys in the neighborhood. We lived on a ranch, and so our pasture was a perfect place for a football field and a baseball diamond, too. Anyway, back to basketball. Dr. Maxwell Maltz, in his famous book, Psycho-Cybernetics, tells of a study done where three groups of basketball players were experimented with. The first group of players was given some basketballs and told to practice from the free throw line for a certain period of time each day. The second group of players was told to sit on a bench and imagine themselves shooting baskets from the free throw line and getting baskets from the free throw line every time they threw the ball. They didn't even touch a basketball. They just practiced making a perfect shot in their minds from the bench every single day. The third group is what is called by scientists as a control group. They didn't do anything. At the end of the study period, each group was tested to see how much each had improved. Now, the control group, the group that didn't do anything, of course, they didn't improve at all. But amazingly, the group that practiced with only their imagination improved nearly as much as the group that practiced with a basketball. Through that and many other studies, scientists have discovered that the brain has difficulty in distinguishing between a well-imagined dream and reality. Use this to your advantage. It works with basketball players, and it will work with piano players, too. Listen to the tape of your pieces often. Listen with your book in hand. Practice in your mind as you listen. Imagine yourself getting a basket every time. Imagine yourself getting the phrasing perfect, the fingering perfect, every time. Imagine yourself getting your goals every time. And don't just use this great success principle with a piano. Use it in the other areas of your life, too. Use it in every area that you want to succeed in. If you want to get better grades, then imagine yourself getting good grades. The better and clearer your dream, the better your chances of success. And once again, positive thinking will get you a lot further than negative thinking. If you want to be a great teacher when you're older, or a successful businessman or dancer or whatever, imagine yourself already being one. I remember reading a story in a magazine some time ago about a high school student who took a college entrance exam. This exam was required by the college he wanted to attend. In fact, it is required by most colleges. This exam is called the SAT test. Anyway, this young man took the SAT test and scored a 99, which is just about as high as you can get on that exam. This young man had been receiving A's all through school, and so it was not surprising that he scored so well on the SAT exam. What was surprising is that the boy thought that the 99 meant that out of all the thousands of students to take the exam, he had only placed 99th. That there were thousands of students who did better than he had. In other words, he thought that he must have been dumber than almost any other student in the United States, except for perhaps 99 other students who scored lower than he did. Well, his first semester in college was awful. He received almost straight F's. The counselor at the college asked him to stop by for an interview. When the young man arrived, the counselor asked, "Why did you receive straight F's this semester?" The young man replied, "Well, it's not my fault. I only scored a 99 on the college entrance exam, so you can't blame me. I'm dumb, not very bright." The counselor asked, "Where in the world did you get the idea that you're not very bright?" "Well, from my college entrance exam," the boy replied. "I only scored a 99 on it, and that's about as dumb as you can get." The boy listened in amazement as the counselor explained that a 99 was not the lowest you can get. It was about as high as you can get on the test. The counselor told him that the test results indicated that he was one of the brightest students in college, not the dumbest. The boy instantly changed his view, and the very next semester, he got straight A's again, just as he had gotten in high school. I hope that through all these stories and talk about vision, you are convinced, not only convinced, but have made a mental decision that you are going to practice with your music tape, that you are going to see yourself playing at the $5 job level. And even if your teacher doesn't have a tape of your pieces, listen to great artists perform. Listen to them frequently. Again, listen to them as you mow the lawn. Listen to them as you lay next to the pool. Listen to them as you rake the leaves or sweep the floor, whatever it is you like to do. Listen to them. Listen to them frequently. Pick up some recordings of piano music that you like. Listen a lot. Perhaps your teacher has some that you can borrow. Public libraries have lots of them. Learn what the $5 job sounds like. Dream about it. Now I would like to discuss a different aspect of vision with you. This aspect of vision deals not with how you play, but with why you play. At this very moment, Thousands of piano students like you across the United States are probably asking themselves, why am I studying the piano? Why, just the other day, my very own son asked,
Dad, how long do I have to study the piano?
Now, I could tell by the way he had asked that question that he wasn't asking how long he had to take piano lessons. He was asking something else. I said to him, Son, it seems as though you're really asking, Dad, when can I quit taking piano lessons? Am I right?
Uh-huh.
I'll tell you what I answered in just a moment. But first, I want to tell you that frequently I will ask my students why they are taking piano lessons. Usually they'll say something like, I don't know, or I'm taking them because my parents want me to take them. When I ask them why their parents want them to take lessons, again the answer becomes, I don't know. Doesn't it seem strange that a person would work hard at playing the piano or anything else and not even know the reason why? Well, when I ask my son, Andrew, why do you suppose I want you to take lessons, son? What do you think he answered? You're right. He said, just like everyone else, I don't know. I then told him why I felt he should take piano lessons. I said, Andrew, it's because the child is father of the man.
Come on, Dad. Give it to me straight.
I did, son. The child's father of the man.
What does that mean?
The phrase comes from a poem by the English poet Wordsworth. My heart leaps up when I behold a rainbow in the sky. So was it when my life began, so is it now I am a man. So be it when I shall grow old, or let me die. The child is father of the man. In other words, Andrew, what Wordsworth was trying to say is that when he was a little boy, he learned to love rainbows. A rainbow made him feel good inside. It makes me feel good inside when I see it. And when he grew to be a man, he still loved rainbows because that's what he learned as a child. So what you do as a child gives birth to what you are as a man. So the child is father of the man. So if you love rainbows as a child, what are you going to love as a man?
Rainbows!
That's right. And so the child is father of the man. I have another question for you, Andrew. Who is it that decides what kind of person you're going to be when you grow up? Me, your mother, or you?
Me?
Correct. You're the one that decides, not me, not your mother. However, we do feel a responsibility to provide the guidance and help you'll need to make decisions about the way you want to be when you grow up. We want to help you develop the kind of habits and character that'll help you be happy as a man. All parents do. Let's talk for a moment about what kind of man you want to be when you grow up. Do you want to be honest or dishonest?
I want to be honest.
Do you want to be the kind of person that people can trust, like Abraham Lincoln? Or do you want to be untrustworthy, the type of person that people never know if you're telling the truth or not?
I want to be like Abraham Lincoln.
There you go. Do you want to be an enthusiastic person, the type of person that people like to be around because you're so fun? Or would you rather be lazy and only get around to doing things because someone pushes you to do them?
I want to be enthusiastic.
That's right. Do you want to be a positive person who jumps in and gets things done? Or would you rather be a complainer? Do you have anyone in your class that always complains about everything?
Yes.
Who?
Philip.
Do you want to be a complainer or someone who's positive and happy?
I want to be positive and happy.
Do you want to be a leech, a parasite, a sloth, someone who expects others to always take care of him? Or do you want to be able to learn some skills so that you can be the one that helps other people and be of service to others?
I want to help and serve others.
Good. I'm glad you do, son. Andrew, you're making some good decisions, some very good decisions. Now be patient because I have just a couple more questions to ask you. Do you want to be a well-disciplined person, one who has the discipline, guts, and courage to know what he should do and wants to do and does it? Or would you rather be undisciplined, the type of person who sits in front of TV all day and doesn't ever accomplish very much.
I want to be disciplined.
Do you want to know how to create beautiful things, beautiful music that inspires and uplifts people? Or do you want to be without any creative ability at all?
I want to be creative.
Good. As I said before, you've made some good decisions, son. When is it easiest to learn these traits that you said you wanted to have? As a child or as a man?
A child.
I agree. Now is the easiest time, isn't it? And the child is father of the man, right?
Right.
Now that you know what you want to be, let's talk about how you will become that type of person. The type of person who's honest, trusted, enthusiastic, positive, helpful and of service to others, self-disciplined, and creative. Where and when can you practice being honest every day?
When I practice the piano, if I make a mistake, I'm honest when I fix it.
Where can you learn to be enthusiastic, even when it's a difficult thing you have to do?
Well, getting to the piano every day is sometimes hard. I can practice being enthusiastic every day as I practice.
Yeah. Now listen carefully to this next question. You said you wanted to develop self-discipline. Is that true?
You bet.
Good. Who is the one that's developing the discipline when your mother has to remind you every day to practice, Andrew?
Mom.
How can you develop that self-discipline that you want and develop responsibility?
By cheerfully going to practice each day without Mom reminding me.
Now do you see why you're studying the piano?
Yes.
Why?
Because the child is the father of the man.
That's right. The child is father of the man. I'm proud of you, son. Whose responsibility is it to provide you with the experiences so that you can learn these things?
Yours.
And whose responsibility is it to take advantage of those experiences?
Mine.
Will you do it?
You.
I have not only had that conversation with my son, I have had that conversation with many of my students, too. Think for a moment. What vision do you have of yourself? What vision do you have of the type of person that you want to become? I'll bet it's pretty close to the one I described for my son and my students. I'll bet you, too, would like to be positive, fun to be around, self-disciplined, the type of person that reaches his goals, accomplishes things, accepts responsibility for his own behavior, and has learned to work hard. I'll bet you want to be the type of person that people say, "There goes Andrea," or "There goes Richard. They are just the neatest people. I wish I could be like them. So much fun to be with." And you can be that type of person. You can practice it every day as you practice the piano, and you can learn it while reveling in the experience of being a glorious human being as you play Bach, Mozart, Haydn, Beethoven, Brahms, some of the greatest minds that have ever lived. And if you associate with the greatest, what kind of person do you think you're going to be? That's right, you'll be the greatest. The greatest you can be, and your greatest gets better and better because you practice it every day when you practice the piano. Your vision, the child is father of the man.